This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Neil Reynolds Podcast. This is already episode 4 of our new season, and our latest guest is a man with quite the story to tell. Philip Lindsay has battled his way to an NFL career, from rupturing knee ligaments in his senior year at high school to being an undrafted free agent, forcing his way onto the Denver Broncos starting roster. He's certainly done things the hard way. My chat with him is probably unlike most you'll hear. I think it's as inspiring as it is sobering. But before we get to that, I just want to remind you all to join our mailing list. Just head over to thenrpod.com to sign up. And when the 2021 season starts, we'll be sending you out updates every week. Now, the Neil Reynolds Podcast is also supported by NFL Game Pass throughout the 2021 season. We'll have more details on that later in the show. But if you can't wait, then visit nflgamepass.com to sign up for free to watch game highlights and more. Even this interview with Philip Lindsay, all our podcasts are on NFL Game Pass this season. So let's get into our conversation then, and where I started in the usual place, getting to know how Philip first got into football.
Yeah, football was a big part of my life, my family's life. It's something that we cherished, and I think we bonded together with that. Even with my mother, everybody was kind of a part of it. And, you know, I had cousins, my uncles. Everybody just played football. So it's one of those things where, you know, it was just kind of meant for me to do, and I enjoy doing it.
And you grew up in the Denver area. I'm trying to do the maths. You were born in 94. So I'm thinking peak Terrell Davis, 97, 98, maybe a bit too young, or did you like the Broncos?
A little bit, but we were always involved in football. So even at that age, I still understood what was going on. And as I got older, read his book and everything else, you know. So, you know, I knew a lot about Terrell Davis. I knew a lot about Denver at that time. I mean, kind of, you know, Denver, you know, is definitely the fan base is really good in Denver. So you were always in tune with what was going on with the Denver Broncos at the time.
I've been to a few Super Bowls, and I was on the sidelines for Super Bowl 50. And actually, that fan base might be one of the, I know people talk about Seattle and Kansas City. When you want to see people whip themselves into a frenzy, that fan base in Denver might be up there.
Oh, most definitely. Whether they're winning or losing, they definitely sell out their tickets, especially on home games. And you know, growing up, that was what it was about. You know, being Denver, Nuggets, Avalanche, the Rockies, you know, it was just all about that.
You set your goal on the NFL at a very young age, didn't you? Did you write a letter stating your intentions? Yeah. What was that? Tell us about that.
Yeah. I forgot about that. My mother, you know, had it packed up somewhere, and she showed it to me one day. But pretty much just, I've always wanted to play football. I always wanted to do what, you know, what a lot of kids wanted to do back in the day is play in the NFL. And, you know, so one of those goals that I've always wanted for myself. And I just kept on chasing it. So, that was kind of how it started off. And you know, like you said, I always played football, always loved the game, and being able to chase my dream, you know, has been exciting and a dream come true.
Tell me about playing high school. So you played at South High School in Denver. Your dad played there before you as a running back as well, I believe. You wore the same number as your dad, Troy. Was it a big influence in terms of football? Did he talk about X's and O's, or was it just more just sharing that passion? Tell me about that relationship.
For sure. So my father played in the Denver public school. So the Denver League, he actually played for Thomas Jefferson, which was called TJ.
Okay.
I played at Denver South, and mainly I played for Denver South because my uncle coached at South. So I wanted to go with him and help rebuild that program and be in the Denver public schools. Cause a lot of people look down on that. And I kind of took it as a challenge. And there's a lot of inner city kids that are very talented, very smart. They just need the tools or the right coaching so that they can get to that next part, which was college for us. But my father was a big, big part in doing so, because he, you know, he owned records and he was a running back at TJ. Also, my uncle was a running back at TJ as well. And I just wanted to follow in their footsteps. And, you know, my father never pushed us, his kids, to play sports. I think we kind of just fell in love with it. And, you know, he loved doing it as well. So he coached all of us, whether it was basketball, football, you know, the girls and the boys, he was involved in everything we did. So it was definitely, you know, great to have him there hands on with us. You know, in the summertime, we were out there grinding hard, you know, running tires, doing things to try to get better. And just fundamentally, he put us on a level where fundamentally we were ready and prepared. And, you know, as we grew into ourselves, the athletic ability takes over after that.
Is it right? You broke his high school records.
I did actually.
How did that feel?
First game felt really good. You know, that's actually one of my goals before I even went into high school, was to break his record, which was going to be hard to do because back in their day, they only played high school football for 3 years. So we had 4 years. So I actually had another year, and it actually took me one game my senior year, the first game of the year, to truly break it. So it was an exciting feeling, but it was bittersweet because that same game I blew my knee out. So, you know, I broke the record, and I think maybe one or two plays later, I blew my knee, was done my senior year, and, you know, kind of went down, you know, downhill at that point because I didn't know what was going to happen. I committed to University of Colorado early, and I didn't know if they were going to keep my scholarship because the head coach at the time got fired. So it was you know, a lot of drama, a lot of uncertainty at that time. And the thing I could say and enjoy was being able to be coached by my uncles and cousins, and also, you know, have that bond and be able to share moments with my father in high school. So, you know, those things that you never, you know, forget.
You made it all the way to the NFL, to the Pro Bowl. But does your dad ever say, well, yeah, but Pop could do it this way, you know, I did this, son, you know? Does he talk about how he played as well?
You know what? My father, when football was done for my father, he was done. You know, right. He never really kind of, you know, he never made it about himself. He's always been about his kids. And that's what I've admired most about both my mother and my father, is they made sure we were okay. And everything was about us. And you know, and any kind of thing that they could do to help us out, they would advise, but they kind of let us grow, and they, you know, had a leash, you know, and they kind of let us go out, and they pull it in if we started acting up or anything like that, but they kind of let us be our own people. And my father never kind of, you know, unless we brought it up, and, you know, and we always asked about stuff, you know, he always had like articles written. And so it was really cool for him probably to be able to tell us and explain to us. But other than that, my father, when football was done for him, especially at that time, you know, football has evolved from, you know, now, from back then. So even, you know, at that time, when they were kind of done, they were done.
So as Philip has just explained, he tore his ACL in his senior year at high school, an injury that is difficult enough for a pro athlete to process, let alone an up-and-coming talent with his entire future feeling like it's resting in the balance. Philip had his offer of a scholarship at his local school, the University of Colorado, but it was by no means guaranteed for a player carrying such a serious injury. For someone so young, mapping out their life and their career, it must have weighed heavily on him.
For sure. So at that time, right, going into my senior year, I committed to University of Colorado. It was between Colorado, Colorado State, and Utah. And, you know, I still had Utah sitting right there. I was very, you know, into being home state. One, because I wanted to stay home and be close to my parents. Two, my mother had she was sick in a muscle disease. And at that time, it wasn't doing very well. So I wanted to be as close to home as possible for if anything happened. And, you know, going into that senior year, I think that, you know, I had a lot of confidence, and I think that I had too much confidence where it could be cocky. And I felt like that was the first injury and that first serious injury that you could possibly have in it, you know, as a football player or any kind of athlete. And, you know, it kind of brought me down. It kind of showed me, you know, how, you know, God gives you these talents and these capabilities to do great things. But also, if you don't, you know, take the time to be thankful for it, you know, it could be taken away, just as given to you just like that. So when that happened, it's first time for me really going through adversity like that. And it was tough because I didn't have the money nor the resources to get my knee to how it is today. Today, nowadays, with the doctors and everything and the rehab, you're in 7-8 months, you're back. You know, I didn't have the money. So I was kind of going off of, you know, YouTube videos and the school PT person and, you know, it wasn't until I got to college, because when I went up for my visit, when they said they were going to honor my scholarship, when Coach Mike McCartney offered, you know, honored my scholarship, they went and checked on my knee, and they were kind of scared that I wasn't going to be able to play again, because my knee was, I was 6 months out and I still couldn't bend or straighten it. And usually by that time, you're in that 6 month mark where everything is straightening and it's all about strengthening and just letting it heal. And I was so far behind that they didn't even know if I was going to be able to play again.
Wow. Thankfully you did. They gave you that scholarship. Your last 2 years, 1200 yards. The last year, nearly 1500 yards, 30 rushing touchdowns in your last two seasons at Colorado. So did you expect to get drafted? And what was that like? Well, you tell me. I would imagine, speaking to many NFL players, it was three agonizing days.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've always stayed in the now. So When I was playing high school, I didn't really think too much of college, and I never thought about the NFL because it's one step at a time. So when I was in high school, I just worried about high school, looked at, you know, watched film on people that did good in high school. When I got the opportunity to go to college, I just focused on 4 or 5 years on college and school and stuff like that. And I never really tried to get my hopes up of going to the NFL because I didn't know what to expect. Because it's one of those things where, you know, you need to stay healthy. First of all, you got to have a little luck with that. Second of all, like, it's out of your control. You can do all you can do and you can be the most successful person. But if a team doesn't want you or doesn't think highly of you, you know, it's kind of out of your hands. And me being 5'8", I think I was at the time 182, 83 pounds. You know, I had the making to be, you know, I love football and I was aggressive and all that. But in this day and age, everything's all about height, weight, you know, and it's sad because it's making kids today not want to play. You know, you're handicapping kids to telling them that if you're not this or you're not that or you're not fast, then you can't play. And therefore, we're losing a lot of these kids now to where they don't want to play football. You know what I mean? They don't want to play this. It's already a physical sport where you're scared. Your parents are scared as it is. Then you tell somebody, well, you can play this sport, but you don't. We're not going to give you the opportunity because you don't fit the criteria of a running back or a quarterback. And that's sad, you know, and that is. And shame on the people today, coaches, the recruiting people. You know, and it's sad because we sit here and we have a bunch of these people that dictate these players and what we do, and they've never played a down of football in their life. But yet they're the ones telling people what they can and can't do. So when I never really thought about it going in there, I hoped that I would get drafted. I thought that, you know what, I was one of the best running backs coming out. I was top 10 2 years in a row. There's no way someone shouldn't give me a shot with sixth or seventh round, because you're sixth and seventh round players, you know, can either make the team or not. It's just like being undrafted.
I thought you showed your class at the end of the draft. You get the call from the Broncos and you're probably a little bit furious you didn't get drafted. And You're on the phone saying, thank you for the opportunity. I look forward to the opportunity. I thought that was, you must have swallowed it down. And it was impressive. It was really impressive.
Yeah. I mean, I will tell you this, man, like, you know, I don't know if you have kids or not. And if they're in a situation where they may be, whether it's football or soccer, whatever it is, you know, that they are going to do at the highest level and they're waiting for a call. That is one of the most nerve-wracking things I've ever had to do. And my family had to endure, I've ever had to go through, because it's out of your control. And you're sitting here for 3 days listening to other people get their name called that you know you're better than. And then you're getting calls, right, from these scouts and stuff. But they're just calling to see maybe if this is your right number, or you're in the fourth round and they're calling, talking about, we're thinking about picking you up as an undrafted free agent. Well, you still got three other rounds. So like, you're just sitting there and teams have freaking four or eight picks, you know, and you're like, I got to at least have one of those, you know, and You're just you can't focus because you're so nervous, you're angry, you're anxious, your family's angry and anxious. So it's one of those times where I never wish a kid would have to go through that. Now, if you're a first or second round draft pick, you're cool, you're chilling because it's right. Like, I know I'm gonna get picked. But when you're 5, 6, 7 and you're unknown, it's probably one of the most stressful, sickening, sad days of your life, you know. And you know, I'm glad I don't have to go through that no more. And honestly, you can kind of say that free agency can be the same way, you know, in a sense, but you're kind of more established because you know what you've done in the league, but you don't know where you're going to go. But yeah, the draft, I'm glad I don't have to do that no more. It fueled me. It gave me something that you know, it separated me. It gave a lot of other kids hope when they seen what I've done. But it's definitely a tough thing to endure.
Philip did enter the NFL as an undrafted free agent with the Denver Broncos in 2018, going on to make the full roster after an impressive preseason. But have no doubt he had to battle his way to that place on the 53. With reps hard to come by, Philip was scrapping for every opportunity. So from the anxiety of his draft experience to then fighting for his place on the roster, he saw the side of football that many don't have to consider. Being an undrafted free agent is far from the glamorous lifestyle we assume takes place in the NFL.
Yeah, so you're not even thought about, right? You go into the building and they tell you right off the back, right? Coach Vance Joseph, right? One of the best coaches I've had so far, great players coach. And, you know, he was honest to everybody, sat everybody in the room. And he would tell them, like, the first three rounds are going to be here for a while. But fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and undrafted, you guys have slim to no chance of making a team. You got to show up every day to tell me. And if you're undrafted, you know what I mean? You're pretty much just a body here. Unless you can show somebody, you can outperform people. You're just there. You know, so for me, I never had doubt. I have never had doubt in my body that I was going to make it. But I also was optimistic about things. And I also were, you know, I just kept my head down. I never got too high on myself, never got too low. I never thought about, you know, the future. I just thought about that now. And I was always scared to be on the outside looking in when I know I could be in this league and do something. So I always try to do the little things right. And that's from the playbook to the blocking to everything, anything I could do on special teams to show that I belong here and put film on there. Then I know that whether I did it or not, and they didn't take me or not, I did everything I got.
You didn't give them an excuse, basically, to get rid of
you. Oh, you can't. You have no room for error. You can't give them an excuse to why. I'm already 5'8", 185, right? They don't want me to be their running back because I am not what a running back is supposed to look like, okay? And then you have to think, okay, if you're a GM, I'm paying all these kids. I'm picking them. I'm having trust in my people to pick the best people. Why is the undrafted player outshining the people we drafted and we're paying money for? So why am I going to give him – I'm going to give him the last reps because I'm going to give my people that I've drafted the benefit of the doubt until they show me they can't no more. So the reps you do get, right, with the threes, with the fours, the special team reps, you got to take advantage of them. You got to go balls to the wall. You got to show something that someone doesn't have. And that's intensity, that's focus, you know, and that's consistency. If you're consistent, then you're going to be in good shape because you're consistent on what you do every day. So that's how I took it. And I knew that, you know, over time, you know, if I stay consistent every day, do the same, make plays every day, then I will have a home here in the NFL.
We'll be back after this short break on the Neil Reynolds podcast. So don't go anywhere. So we interrupt my conversation with Philip Lindsay to bring you some news about NFL Game Pass, who are, of course, our presenting partner throughout the 2021 season. That's exciting for us. But also what's exciting is the new Resume Where You Left Off feature on NFL Game Pass, which allows for fluid viewing of all the NFL action. Available only on the web last season, this feature has now been expanded across all devices. This means you can stop and start any on-demand program and pick it up exactly where you left off from any device. This makes it even easier to enjoy your NFL Game Pass subscription where, when, and how you want. And remember, if you would like to watch this episode of my chat with Philip Lindsay, all the previous interviews from this current series, the podcast is available to stream on NFL Game Pass all season long. Now let's get back to the show.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Welcome back to the Neil Reynolds Podcast and my conversation with Philip Lindsay. Now, before our short break, Philip opened up on his determination to make it in the NFL. From forcing his way onto the Denver Broncos roster, he would go on to become the first undrafted player to have 1,000-yard back-to-back seasons to start an NFL career. He made the Pro Bowl in his first season and also scored 10 touchdowns. Even for a first-round draft pick, those sort of numbers are rare. But Philip did exactly that, breaking the mold to make his mark. And he says it's not just about talent. It's about something else altogether.
It's my mentality. Anytime I tell somebody I'm going to do something, whether it's football or if it's just in general, I'm going to do it. I will find a way to do it because that's just how I've been raised. That's how who I am. I guess, you know, everybody has their kind of secret talent. Everybody has their, you know, something that makes them special. And I feel like for me, it's always been that I'm accountable. I'm consistent and I'm going to give you everything I got. You know, if I can do it, and there's not a lot of stuff I can't do when you put your mind to it, and that's anybody. It's not just me. It's about taking your pride aside. It's about understanding, like, the good and the bads of it and accepting it and going for it hard. If you do that in life in general, and that's how I take life, you're going to be better off than if you just sit there feeling sorry for yourself. And that's how I felt. I felt going into it, I was like, you know what? I'm going to give everything I got. I'm going to have fun, but I'm going to be intense. I'm going to be focused. I'm going to show, you know, I'm not afraid to fight somebody. I'm not afraid to get down and dirty. I'm not afraid to do any of that. You know, for me, it was like, this is it. Well, you know, this is for my family too. Everybody else is getting taken care of. I have nothing. So, you know, for me, it's like, I got to go hard. I got to go hard and I got to show everything I got. Because if something happens where I get hurt or something, I can't play this game. I don't want to have regrets of saying I wish I would have done this better. So I went hard and I just stayed focused. I worked on my body hard. And it's something that, you know, I started in college because I was getting 25, 30 carries in college, especially my last year. And I just stayed, you know, in the training room to get healthy and to do the little stuff, sacrifice. I didn't do all the partying, the drinking, all that. I wanted to sacrifice that stuff for a better tomorrow, pretty much. And I just kind of, I took that and I ran with it. On top of that, I didn't have to go far. I was home at the time, so I was comfortable. I was at my parents' house, so I didn't have to worry about getting a house. You know, I could just play football, go home like it was high school still. So, and honestly, I think that helped. It grounded me. I got to go home, talk to my parents, talk to my father. You know, I was at home, so I knew the ins and outs of Colorado. So everybody knew me. So it was okay. For me, it was just more about being comfortable, and I was comfortable, and I could just play football.
You asked me just a moment ago if I had children. I do, and I would love for them to live with me forever. And you did live with your parents in the basement. I'd love my kids to do that. And why did you do that? Was it again, like you say, that's one less distraction. This is a big jump to go to the NFL anyway. I'm home. I'm with the people I love. What was the reasoning there? And what was the reaction around the league?
Yeah. So, I mean, mainly why was one, as an undrafted player, you're not making a lot of money, especially from the jump. You know what I mean? Everybody signs their signing bonuses. You don't get this. You get like a little signing bonus. So I, at the time, had a high signing bonus for an undrafted player, which was $15,000, which is more than I've ever had in my life. But also, you got to take taxes away. So, I learned that. You know, after the taxes, you got $10,000, which is still more than I've ever seen. You know, but that wasn't enough to get me started anywhere. So, you know, my parents say, you know, you should stay home, save your money, help us out a little bit at the house. And also, you're comfortable. You know, you know, both my brothers were in college. My sisters were out. So it was just me in the house. So it was like, you know, they were okay with me being in the house because, you know, they don't, you know, they love their sons.
And, did you get spoiled? So they won. Did you get spoiled?
Exactly. So, you know, I had a home cooked meal. I got, you know, my mother helped wash my clothes, you know. So it was just a great setup for me, you know, and it helped me financially so much and helped me get a jump start. And it also helped my family get their house together as well. You know, so it was a win-win for me and my family at that time. And my parents at that time. And, you know, it kind of set the tone and it kind of, you know, made me who I am for the, you know, to go into the NFL. And it, you know, it was a great story.
It is a great story. You're a great story with the way you went through college and high school. And then last year, I guess there's some frustration in terms of there's some injuries. There's even a game where you start a quarterback. So bizarre the thing was.
And then in the end, the Broncos, you asked them to cut you loose, right? And so again, it's all part of the journey of different. You're a young player still in the league, but you've been through a lot already. What was that like last season?
Yeah, so let's just start, like, for all of us with the coronavirus. Like, this was life-changing for everybody and will forever be life-changing. So you have that. Like, you know, like, you're not – at this time, people are dying. Something that, you know, this is the first time, you know, any of us ever had to experience something where, like, it seemed like the world was ending.
Like a movie, yeah.
And it's like, you know, you're not worried about football now. You're worried, you know, for me, I have a son. I have a fiance. I have, you know, now I'm a little older. My third year done, you know. I have to worry about them. You know, it was crazy. You know, like, everybody was getting coronavirus. So I wasn't worried about football. And you didn't even think football was going to be happening.
Right.
Then when the NFL decided they still wanted to do this, well, you put us in a situation where we had no resources. So we're outside, like we're in Little League, practicing what we can, lifting what we can. Well, that's not good enough for this league. This league, you got to be on point from conditioning,
right,
or you are going to get hurt. And you've seen that. You know, studies did show that we did better being, you know, not as hurt because we didn't have preseason games and stuff like that. But I feel like a lot of people would have stayed healthier if we would have had a full season like we did this year, where we could do a bunch of stuff, get batted up to camp. You know, so you're dealing with that. And then on top of that, you know, I thought I've done enough to where, you know, Denver was going to, you know, give me a contract and I was going to be able to stay home and it was going to be a fairy tale ending. But we all know, you know, everything's not perfect and nothing just ends how you want it to end. And, you know, for me, you know, they brought in another running back and, you know, you're sitting there your first time dealing with that, knowing that, like, I just had two good years and then you had to deal with some political things like that, which is part of the game. You know, so you're learning as you're going. And it's frustrating. And I think that, you know, my fiance and my son, you know, they got to see a different part where it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but it's what the NFL is truly about. And it's about understanding that you're just another person out there and that no matter how well you do, somebody else is always going to be there or someone else is going to try to discourage you, especially when you're undrafted. It doesn't matter if you've played 4 years, 5 years, and went
that tag's still there for you. You think that undrafted thing still matters? Yeah.
That stigma. There's always going to be a person saying there's a reason why he was undrafted, and they're always going to try to find a reason to lowball you on things because they're saying there's a reason why he was undrafted. You know, so like that's always going to be there. You know, and any undrafted player in this league can tell you that. Now you hope that you can get with people that really do admire you, really do like your style and you know, want to excel you, you know, and you go with that, you know, when you can. But the NFL is great parts, but it also it's there's a lot of demons involved in this stuff that you have no control over.
And that's why it's good to chat to players like yourself, Philip, because, yeah, we see the touchdowns, we see the glory, the celebrations. There's already a conveyor belt of somebody coming to replace you. That's the cold business side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel now to be kind of outside of Colorado for the first time in your football career and I guess start again with Houston?
Yeah, I mean, I feel great. Okay, you know, like, you know, I didn't answer everything in your last question, and that was my first year having the injuries like I did. And it was frustrating because you have these injuries that you can't have no control over and you're trying to rush back and you're hurting yourself more. Every game has felt like it was worse, like something else. It started with my toe the first game. Then, you know, had a good game, then went to the next. And then it was my head. And then went from my head to my knee, then my knee. So it was just, it took a toll. And so for me, it was just one of those things where I was ready for the season to be done because I could not possibly physically do anything to help Denver at the time or myself for the offseason, knowing that I was probably going to be on the market. So it was really frustrating for my family and I, my fiance and my son. It was just one of those things where you didn't know what was going to happen. And so then when we did decide to cut ties with Denver, it was it was bittersweet because, you know, this is my home state, you know, and I love the fans and I love being home, but I also wanted the respect that I did not get here and I needed to find elsewhere. And I think that starting somewhere new was going to not only help me as a person, but it was also going to strengthen my fiance and I and my son's, you know, relationship, because now it's just us three. You know, we were spoiled by having our families there, both of our families, because we're both from Colorado, there at, you know, to help us with the kid. Now it was just us on our own, with like many other players are doing. And so now we needed that, and we need that to, you know, strengthen our relationship and also just grow up. And I think that when you look at it, you know, it was a bittersweet to leave Colorado, but also we get to see somewhere different, get to see how a different organization runs herself, get to live somewhere that we probably never would live before. And, you know, we're taking it and running with it right now.
Obviously, there's lots of conversations ever since the playoffs last year about Deshaun Watson. I'm not going to ask you to comment on that, but it's something you'll get asked about a lot. So how do you just say, I'm just going to be me. I'm just going to do the bit that I can do to help the team win. Is that the best way to approach it as a player?
Well, that's all you can do. You got to understand, like, you know, we have no control, you know, with the Deshaun situation. You know, where there's 28, 30 new players and a lot of veterans. So we're coming into a situation where we know how to play football. We know what it is to win games and to help organization win, you know, and that's what I think that we're all focused on. If we as an individual do our part, and as a vet do our part and do it well, we'll be in good shape. The rest of it, you know, is out of our control. You know the all the other stuff, the noise and stuff, we were brought in before, you know, after all this happened. So, you know, we have nothing to say about that. But all we can say is the people here now, you know, we're going to shock a lot of people, because you know, fans look at, and people just look at stats, and they look at what looks sexy on paper, and what's on paper never goes how paper's supposed to go. And so that's why we play the game of football. And I think that, you know, Coach Cully does a great job, and I think that we're going to shock a lot of people if we can stay healthy.
And you've been written off before. So if they're writing off the Texans,
it's nothing new. You know, it's nothing new. You know, you got a bunch of people that everybody voices their opinion and want to put their two cents in. And a lot of them never played a down of football, never had to go through this, never even understand it. But they, you know, everybody just wants to see, be heard. And, you know, it's okay. You know, that's what it's for. You know, that's why people play sports in general. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just opinions.
So as you've heard just there, Philip is a player who knows how to speak, and he has a lot to say on where he's come from and his journey. But where is he heading? He's starting 2021 as a Houston Texan after leaving his home state and the Denver Broncos. So he's out of Colorado for the first time in his football career. He has a fresh start, and his journey feels like it's maybe only just beginning.
Yeah, I think for me, it's more so just continue to play at a high level. And I do want to get, you know, my rookie year, I was top five. I want to get back up there. I want to get the opportunity to show that, you know, I can be the number one running back in the NFL. But also, yeah, I just want to win games. And I think that we have a great team. We have a great running back room. And I think that, you know, there's room for all of us. You know, you got David Johnson, you got Mark Ingram, you got myself, and we all bring something different to the table, which can help us win games. And I think that if we all do our part, and we, you know, we help each other out, and, you know, we have each other's back, we're going to all stay healthy too. That's the name of this game. And I think for me, it's like, if I can stay healthy, I'll have a great year. I'll have an explosive year, and I'll do what I do best, you know. And I think that's the key, is stay healthy and just focus on myself like I did my rookie in my second year.
Are you going to let one of the undrafted rookies sleep in your basement? No.
No, I mean... They got so much things. They can get a hotel now. They can take care of them now.
So there you are. It's my conversation with Philip Lindsay. Looking forward to seeing what he does with a new team. He's made a very good start to his career, of course, with the Denver Broncos. Three seasons in the NFL, 2,000-yard campaigns. Now he's off to the Houston Texans. Let's bring in producer Gary Hayes as we're going to go into the mailbag. How are you, Gary?
Hi, Neil. I'm good, thanks. That was a lovely interview. I think that's my favourite one that you've done out of the 38 episodes we've done so far in this entire podcast.
High praise indeed.
I thought it was just great. And I mean this with the utmost respect for him as well. That, and obviously, as people listening, then someone poked fun at me for my Lowndry pronunciation on Twitter earlier on this week. But I don't know the NFL that well. But so I say this as a complete novice. But he was sort of like the real life Rod Tidwell. But I mean that in the best way, because he's a guy that loves football, has been unfancied, and by hook or by crook, he's just got there. And I just love that about, you know, athletes like him, that across any sport, they've been unfancied and they just believed in themselves and got there. And I just really respect that about him.
Absolutely. And we'll have a little Rod Tidwell connection next week. Well, more will be revealed in a moment, but let's see what's in the mailbag.
Okay. Well, we've got just one question this week, because I know you're going to really want to get stuck into this. So this is from Aaron Reeves, and I'm hoping I pronounced your name correctly there, Aaron. Is it Aaron? He says, Neil, what is the best and worst training camp interview you've done? And if you could interview any NFL player or coach, past or present, who would it be?
Wow.
That's a layered question.
Yeah, so the second part, I haven't given much thought to. Let me do the first part. So obviously I've done hundreds of training camp interviews. I've been going to training camp every year. Wow, probably 12, 15 years now. And obviously the last 2 years, I haven't been able to get out there, but normally I do a lot of interviews. And I guess it depends on the circumstance sometimes. So you can catch somebody in either a really good mood or a really bad mood. I thought two excellent ones I had recently were with Sean Payton, the head coach of the New Orleans Saints, and then his quarterback, Drew Brees. The Brees one might not surprise many people, but you know, I'd kind of heard from Sean Payton that he could be quite grouchy, could be difficult to deal with. And, you know, I've worked a couple of events with him around London games where he got on and off stage as quickly as he could. But he was an absolute charm. He was an absolute charm. And then the Saints invited us into their team cafeteria, and we sat there eating their lunch with Drew Brees on the next table, hanging out with the offensive linemen. It was really well done. They really looked after us. The two times I've interviewed Sean McVay, the head coach of the Los Angeles Rams, just a ball of energy. It was brilliant. And what's always fascinates me about Sean McVay, one time he asked to do the interview at 6 a.m. And I was like, okay, luckily we're quite early into our trip, so we were up early in America. And so he's up and he's an absolute bundle of energy while half our crew is asleep. And then the next time he asked to do it at 7 a.m. And I said to the crew, I said, you better get set up because he's always early. And he rocks up at 20 to 7 and he's like, can we go? Let's go. Let's go. And he's bouncing around. Philip Rivers was a good one as well. Very good. Love chatting to Philip Rivers on the sidelines of Chargers training camp. So those are a couple of the good ones. Do you want me to get straight onto the bad, or have you got a follow-up question on the good?
Well, I was just going to ask you, but get to the bad, and then I did have a question for you, because it's something that annoys me about being at these big media events where you're sat around waiting. That's what I was going to ask you. How do you feel about waiting? Because that is my pet hate, waiting and waiting, and sometimes you wait for hours.
Right, so we did one with the Atlanta Falcons. So we call it kind of hurry up and wait. And you get there, the team want you there at 10 o'clock in the morning, and you set up, and they're like, are you set up? Are you set up? Are you set up? And we're like, yeah, we're done. You know, and it's 10:30 and you're set up. They're like, good. Coach is coming in at 2 o'clock. It's like, why are we here then? What's going on? But with the Atlanta Falcons, we had flown on a red eye from Oakland through the night. I think I've told you this before, where I almost passed out interviewing Matt Ryan. But we flew through the night. We went and got some breakfast. We kind of had the lorry driver's wash in the toilets at a Publix, you know, and and then went to the Falcons. And then 10:30 became like 11. Then it was 12. Then it was 1 o'clock, and we're hanging. The whole crew is desperate for something to eat. And there was a Publix just around the corner. And we were like, what should we do? And in the end, we said, screw it. Let's just go for it. We're just going to go for it. We're going to get some lunch. We went and got some sandwiches, brought them all back, and then just sat there for another 2 hours. Remember, we were glad we did, because they weren't coming at all. And then eventually we got the interviews done. But so much of it is based on circumstance and, you know, whether you're in a good situation as well with interviews. I've written down four, which are memorable bad ones. Colin Kaepernick, when he was a quarterback of the 49ers, we had arranged a 10-minute one-on-one with Colin Kaepernick, and he was late arriving. Then he saw a journalist that he knew in the doorway, stood there chatting to him for about 5 minutes. By the time he sat down, we had about 2 minutes of our pre-arranged 10 left. And then he said, you got 2 minutes.
That's terrible.
Surely it's 10 from when you sit down. And the PR guy's like, sorry, it's two. So that was one. The Steelers set up Antonio Brown in the corridor between the field and the locker room after practice. So it's like being in a shopping center. So the whole interview was pretty much unusable. And I think they did that because earlier in the day, I'd asked a couple of questions they weren't happy with. And they pulled an interview halfway through. It's the only time it's ever happened to me, interviewing Ryan Clark. And I don't think the Steelers were very happy with me or with some of the answers he was giving. So they put Antonio Brown in the corridor. Jeff Fisher was the coach of the Rams when I interviewed him, head coach. The door was over my left shoulder. Coach Fisher came in and didn't even get straight in his seat. He had his feet pointing at the door the whole time. Literally, the second the interview finished.
So he really wanted to be there.
Yeah, the second the interview finished, it was like someone had put a catapult up his backside and sprung him across the room and he was gone. But my favourite was Jeremy Shockey, who was a bit of a controversial figure. And a couple of years later, I interviewed Jeremy Shockey in London and he was so drunk that we couldn't use the interview. But this was at New Orleans Saints training camp in Jackson, Mississippi. And we're waiting out the front of the building and then behind the building where the players got changed. It was at university, so it wasn't their regular place. Behind the building was this one of those like chain link fences. And so they said, oh, Jeremy Shockey's coming out in a minute to do the interview with you. Next thing I see out the back of the building, because we could see around the side and towards the back, Jeremy Shockey trying to climb over this chain link fence, basically got stuck halfway up the fence, had to climb down, do the walk of shame past us. And went, sorry, fellas, I've got to go to a meeting. I was like, why are you climbing over the back fence then?
Just hilarious. Didn't want to do the interview. It's just so funny because you're looking, you think with these sportsmen, you're like, it should be easier to say no.
Just, and there's some that just, you know, Drew Brees couldn't have been. I mean, there's some that get it. And Drew Brees is heading into TV. Philip Rivers is heading into coaching. And Jeremy Shockey's disappeared off the face of the planet. You know, it's like some get it and some don't. And but actually, it is circumstance. It's where, it's what sort of mood you get the team in. You know, what sort of place you get set up. You know, Antonio Brown's one was all about location. And then all time, I think I'd love to speak to George Halas, who was the founding father of the NFL. He was the owner of the Chicago Bears. He was a coach of the Bears. And I'd just love to know all about what happened at the start of the formation of the NFL, I think. But yeah, so that's some of my, they should go in a book, some of those training camp stories, I think.
There's an idea, Neil.
There you go.
Neil Reynolds does training camp. So speaking of good interviews and good talkers and people who get it, we hinted it at the start of this mailbag when I said about Rod Tidwell. So you've got Jerry Maguire on next week.
We have the real life Jerry Maguire. So Lee Steinberg is obviously a super agent, kind of has an amazing story to tell as well. He was the biggest agent in the game. Tom Cruise is playing him in a Hollywood movie. Then he suffers from alcoholism, disappears off the map, and then he's rebuilt his career. He's the agent of Patrick Mahomes. He's the agent of Tua Tagovailoa, the Miami Dolphins quarterback. It's just been an incredible comeback story. So can't wait to share that one with everyone on the Neil Reynolds podcast in association with NFL Game Pass. So until then, my thanks to you, Gary, and to everyone listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietto. Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork, including the graphics and videos across our social media channels. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. If you'd like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast, help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and a review wherever you're listening. This has been another Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.